Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Radio Nerd. I am recording this episode at a different time of day than I normally do, so if I have a different level of energy or a different amount of presence, I guess, that's why. Welcome. It's been a week, I guess 2 weeks when this episode will go up, since the last episode. I apologize for that. Unfortunately, last week I had a bit of a brain fart and was kind of overloaded after doing a bunch of homework that I kind of forgot what day it was and forgot about recording an episode. So I'm going to be trying something new where I'm going to record episodes in batches, and hopefully that will make it so that I won't have to worry about missing things. I'll have like episodes recorded so that I have a sort of backlog that I can then send in episodes. You know, I won't have to work on stuff every single week, and that way it'll give me more time to work on school and things like that. I think that the upcoming winter holidays will be good for that too, because I'll take some time to do some recording over the holidays when I'm going to be a little bit more free. But yeah, let's get into things. Just another reminder, you can find the podcast here on both Instagram and over email. The email address is radionerdwlu@gmail.com, and the Instagram is, you can find it at radio_nerdwlu. Feel free to follow, feel free to reach out. If you want to talk about last week's episode, this week's episode, anything really. If you have an idea for an episode or you would like to come on and talk about something specifically, I'm definitely open to having an active conversation on one of these episodes. That would also be always be nice. I do love the sound of my own voice, but it's always nice to hear someone else talk about something too, and talk about something that they are interested in or that impacts them personally. It's always a good idea. But anyways, let's get into this week. This week is part two of three sort of episodes in a row here where I'm going to be talking about gaming. And this episode's going to break with the trend of last week where I talked about video games. And this week is going to talk about a different type of gaming. I believe next week we are going to be doing the long-awaited Gamergate episode. I just wanted some, a little bit of a break between the episode where I talked about sad puppies and the Gamergate one. So I figured it would be good to get a little bit in here and talk about stuff. Today we're going to be talking about TTRPGs, or tabletop role-playing games. And we're going to be talking about inclusion in it. We're going to be talking about some positives, some negatives. We're going to be talking about some of the reasons why these are important. This episode's definitely going to link heavily into the very first episode that I did about representation, LGBTQ representation specifically. But I talked about representation as a whole, and we're going to be talking about that again a little bit more here. So let's just quickly go back over that. I think the two key things that we're going to have to talk about again is representation and tokenism. So as I discussed in the first episode, I'm just going to pull up here. Representation is really, the most important thing with representation is not devolving into tokenism. And the biggest thing with regards to that is representation doesn't just mean showing characters of a specific identity in general. it means depicting those people as real, or those characters, I should say, as real living people. People who are just as valid and just as existing as anybody else, specifically white, straight white males, which happen to dominate areas such as tabletop RPGs. I should probably define tabletop RPGs before I get too back or too much into representation. But tabletop RPGs are RPGs that are played sitting at a table with a group of your friends. It can be played online now, I should state that, but I'm just going to go with a bare bones definition here. Usually with pen and paper, sometimes depicted with miniatures, occasionally with someone who runs a story, like a game master or a dungeon master. And it's basically like a collaborative role-playing and storytelling sort of game. It sort of blends ideas of dice and board games with some tactics of things like war games, along with role-playing and a whole lot of what's the word I'm looking for here? Improv. So you find all sorts who play tabletop RPGs, especially nowadays. It's recently been growing in popularity, and we're going to be focusing a lot on Dungeons & Dragons in this episode, because Dungeons & Dragons is the most popular role-playing game, tabletop role-playing game. Maybe most popular role-playing game, I don't know. Maybe some big TTRPGs and, or sorry, not TTRPGs, MMOs and other sort of things have bigger fan bases, but Dungeons & Dragons sort of form the foundation for what we think of as role-playing games nowadays. It's the grandfather of them all. Unfortunately, using the term grandfather is pretty accurate because of where it came from. Dungeons & Dragons was created in the, I want to say 80s? It might have been 70s. Like late 70s. Let me just check here. It was late 70s. Oh. Yeah, the very original Dungeons & Dragons came out in 1974. Oh, so that's not really late at all. And it was originally designed by Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson. I should note right here starting is that Gary Gygax was a straight white nerd, and he came from a more conservative Christian background, and in many ways a lot of those things influenced the decisions that he would have made making his game. And there is a lot of problematic things within D&D. Excuse me. And there are there has been a lot that has happened since the 5th edition of Dungeons & Dragons, which came out in 2014. It's the most recent edition of the game. And there's been a lot that has happened in the, 7 years since it came out, that has changed the game, has changed the company behind the game, Wizards of the Coast, and has sort of, you know, paved the way for a lot of conversations about inclusion, about diversity, and it's becoming one of the more progressive sides of the nerd culture in general, which is really amazing when you think about the stereotypes that a lot of people think about when they think about Dungeons and Dragons. They think about like a bunch of white nerds sitting in a basement somewhere, you know, casting spells at each other or whatever, right? And while that's not entirely inaccurate, those groups have become a lot more diverse, and they've been informed by a lot of different things. And we're going to go into some of the things that they've been informed by here, and we're also going to talk about some changes that have been made and, you know, some places where there needs to be more changes. So, let's talk about why representation is not just about showing, but is about showing properly, as I'm going to sort of state it. Like I said a little earlier, you know, representation is about showing that these people are, these people, these characters, is showing about, you know, diversity doesn't mean someone is just displayed as a amalgamation of stereotypes or an amalgamation of, you know, tropes or characteristics that someone believes is someone's identity. So yeah, it's about depicting stories, because at its core, what something like D&D is a game about telling stories with your friends. It's about, you know, hanging out, rolling some dice, having a good time, socializing. It is for me, at least. But it's also about, like, constructing a story together. And especially if you have a group that is diverse and is made up of... Oh, apologies, I keep yawning. And it's annoying me, and I hope it's not annoying you guys. But it's not just about telling a nice comprehensive story. It's about, you know, being able to give the space for everybody to tell the stories that they want to tell. Tell the stories that reflect on their experiences. And especially if it's a diverse group of people, then those stories will take a diverse group of influences. So, I was saying that D&D has become a lot more popular lately, and there have been a lot of things that have influenced that. The one of the biggest things that I would say is an influence on D&D has been streaming. Twitch has exploded, obviously, over the past, since the start of the pandemic especially, but also beforehand. If you don't know what Twitch is a streaming platform. But YouTube as well has streaming. You can stream. I was about to say has streamability. And something about that, it just sounds hilarious. That should be on it. YouTube, upload your videos, has streamability. But yeah, the ability to stream, not just the sites to stream it, but also technology and sort of techniques to be able to depict and stream a game of Dungeons and Dragons or other tabletop RPGs. There are others available. We're going to be talking about a couple of them, because there are companies that are doing a lot better than Wizards of the Coast at adapting to the times. I will say that Wizards has been making changes that are positive, but making changes that are positive and actually making a positive impact are somewhat different. And I'll get into what that means later. Streaming. Streaming your game has become huge. Being able to see people play the game and enjoy the game can be pretty revolutionary to people, and can really inspire people to be like, hey, this looks really awesome. This is something I want to do. So the biggest success story from streaming has to be Critical Role, which is a live play game. I think it used to be live. I believe they record their things now because of the pandemic. But it started out as a group of, as they say, nerdy voice actors who get together and play Dungeons and Dragons together. It started as a home game, ran together with a group of friends, and then they decided to try streaming it and started to do that. And as it went on, it became this humongous success. and has now spread it into a business that they are doing on their own, which is fantastic. And I think the with the Critical Role, you know, they're all voice actors. They're all actors, right, at the end of the day. And they put on a very good show. And, you know, the person who, Matthew Mercer, the Dungeon Master, you know, has a very incredible way of telling stories. And the cast of the show have really incredible ways of creating their characters and really inhabiting those characters. And Critical Role recently came out with a new season. This is sort of where the topic comes from. They started a few weeks back their third campaign, which is pretty incredible that they've been able to do it that long. Some of their first campaign took a really long time. Their second campaign, I think they're like up in the triple digit number of episodes for this. And these are like 4-hour episodes. To be honest with you, I mostly like skip through bits and sort of catch up on the wiki and watch some like recaps and stuff like that. I don't really have time in my day to watch the whole thing, but it's really fun and it's very entertaining to watch them play and inhabit the characters. And I have watched full episodes before. I've had time in the past to be able to watch them. And the biggest thing starting with season 2 and also into this season 3 is their attention to diversity. Now they are all white, and I will state that out loud. It's a fairly equal cast, gender division-wise, which is actually significant somewhat within nerd communities. There are the standout sort of streaming groups that are like all women or who are, you know, very diverse groups of people. But they're rarer, and being able to see something so popular that is slightly more representative is really good. But what they really show representative is their storytelling. And they do, okay, I should note that they have guests on fairly frequently, and these guests tend to be very diverse guests. And they're all mutual friends of the groups, people that they know from working in entertainment and from being attached to sort of the nerd community. So you get plenty of people who are well known to lots of people, lots of nerds. Specifically in season 2, when I started out, there were a number of times that the actors would portray characters who were members of the LGBTQ plus community, which is incredible to see that. And I know the community has really latched on to things like that and have really, you know, grown to love depictions of these characters that are openly queer and that are able to show that you can depict these characters within the games, that you can show characters who are like this and it be perfectly enjoyable, something that, you know, you're free to do, right? Like I said with representation in the first episode, representation is about seeing yourself reflected in a piece of media. It's about seeing that you exist by showing everybody else that you exist, by people depicting you within media. You are able to see yourself. You're able to see yourself as something more than yourself, if that makes sense. Critical Role's new season is taking place in a continent that is somewhat, I don't want to like get into a conversation here of critiquing Matthew Mercer's world building or anything like that, but it's somewhat like a fantasy Middle East, fantasy North Africa type of continent. And they have announced before the actual campaign released that they are working with diversity checkers, people who are from those areas of the world who professionally will check other people's works to make sure that the depictions that they have are not bordering on offensive or stereotypical or anything like that, which I think is a really amazing thing that they're doing. Because at the end of the day, not a lot of people do that yet, which is very problematic. You know, Matthew Mercer, like the rest of the cast that are on it, are very good at being like, hey, we know that we're white. We know that we don't fully understand everything that could be happening to people. And we know that, you know, it's important to have those people to tell us when we might be stepping over a line that we didn't know exist. You know, it's important to employ those people, which is what they're doing. They're paying someone to do this. This isn't like I'm asking my friend who, you know, is brown if what I'm saying is like horribly insensitive to him or something like that. This is them hiring people specifically so that those people can make sure that their stories are, you know, stories of people like them are being told properly, which is something that more creators who are white or who are, you know, of backgrounds of which they're not, which are different from the stories that they are telling, need to do. It's an important step, I think. Additionally, Critical Role released a shorter campaign in between their season 2 ending and this new season 3 that started last month. I believe it was last month, yes. Called Exandria Unlimited, Exandria being the name of the world that all of Matthew Mercer and Critical Role's campaigns have taken place in. It was, it had a different DM this time. This time it had, and I'm really going to apologize if I say her name wrong, Abria Iyengar. I feel like I'm pronouncing her last name incorrectly, and I apologize. But she's kind of an up-and-comer. She's a woman of color who has been sort of making the rounds and being really starting to become really well-known in the streaming and in the D&D community. I hadn't actually heard of her before this, which is unfortunate because I have looked up things since then, and I did some watching of Exandria Unlimited, and it was really enjoyable. And this is the other thing, other part of representation, especially with regards to something like tabletop RPGs. Having the Dungeon Master, who is essentially the storyteller and the person who sort of referees and runs the game, this makes a little bit more sense if you played a tabletop RPG before. But yeah, think about the Dungeon Master or the Game Master if you're playing a different type of game as a combination referee, storyteller, and what's the other term that I would use? I guess teammate too, as well, to the rest of the people who are playing as characters, right? The Dungeon Master runs the game and portrays the characters who are not the players, and sort of envisions the world for the people and, you know, develops the story for them. Having someone who's a person of color run that on such a high-profile platform as Critical Role is inspiring to women. It's inspiring to people of color. It's inspiring to see someone different, right? At the end of the day, Matthew Mercer is a white man, right? And him allowing allowing might not be the right word, him giving the platform and the reins of his world and of the storytelling to someone who is a woman and a person of color is incredible. And it's just as important in many ways, back to representation, that the people who are telling the stories are diverse. Like, the reasonings why Sad Puppies was such a detrimental and such a horrible movement, along with Rabid Puppies. I don't think we need to get into that again, because Rabid Puppies is just, like, reactionaryism on top of itself. But the reason why those things are so bad is because they try to restrict the stories that we can get from diverse authors and diverse creators. And diversity and different experiences breed different stories. They give you the tools to create a completely different story than, say, someone who never experienced any of those things. And that is where true creativity comes from, is when we use the tools that we have gained through our lives to create. And when someone has completely different tools than you creating, we will only benefit from unique and better stories. Abria has been doing some other things. She has been on Dimension 20, which is College Humor's, I believe, their sort of Dungeons and Dragons-esque and tabletop RPG streaming service. She's also been on she will be on the Adventure Zone later this year, I believe, which is the Dungeons and Dragons / TPRPG podcast hosted by the McElroy brothers. Or McElroy, I think that's how you pronounce them. I can't remember. I have honestly never really watched them. But she's been making the rounds, being invited to a lot of different places. And I think it's because people have seen the importance of it after Critical Role did it. And Critical Role has a tendency to sort of set the bar for a lot of these things. And I'm glad that they continue to set the bar higher, because it needs to be set continuously higher. There needs to be more spaces for people who are not white men, not straight white men, to be able to tell stories, to be able to depict diverse characters, and to, enrich tabletop RPGs. So like I was saying, Wizards of the Coast has been making some good moves. Not all of them great, but I'm going to go over a little bit of that just right here. Some of the most recent collections of adventures have had very diverse sections of writers who have told a lot of the different adventures within these books. For example, Mysteries of Candlekeep, is that the book? I'm trying to just remember the name of the book. Candlekeep Mysteries. Why did I think it was the other way around? Anyways, Candlekeep Mysteries was one of the most recent, came out earlier this year. I believe it is the most recent. Oh, no, it's not the most recent adventure. But it was an anthology of smaller adventures. And for those of you who don't really know the lingo, adventures are basically like pre-written sections of game. Like, normally the dungeon master would be responsible for writing the story and sort of developing the world and everything like that. What adventures do is they give you the story and sort of the rough outline of how you can run some of the game. And Candlekeep Mysteries was very good about having a lot of diverse writers, a lot of different ideas, like I said, coming from different people who have different tools to make those, like different creators who have different tools to make those interesting and diverse stories. Now, that has continued with a lot of these books, and a lot of the books have been of fantastic quality. You've had like a lot of different diverse writers, but the problem is that a lot of these writers are freelance writers or contract writers, writers who don't actually like physically work at Wizards of the Coast, who basically work as freelance or contractors, basically through the company. So they don't get benefits. They're paid a much smaller percentage as compared to, say, the head designers and the head writers who actually work, you know, for Wizards of the Coast. The Wizards of the Coast section of Dungeons and Dragons is a very small section of the company, and for a game that is huge. And the problem becomes that they pay a small number of people to do, you know, an equatable amount of work to the people who are also being contracted on to write for these books. There are plenty of third-party companies that do a much better job of paying the writers well and of giving the writers, you know, proper recognition. For a lot of Dungeons and Dragons histories, writers like this, the freelancers, were given practically nothing in pay. And while that pay has increased, it's nowhere near the level that it should be for industry standards. And a lot of these people, you know, are struggling to work. They're being given the opportunity to have their name in the Dungeons and Dragons book. But at the end of the day, your name in a Dungeons and Dragons book doesn't put food on the table, right? It doesn't pay medical bills. It doesn't allow you to survive in this world. As unfortunate as that statement is, it's not something that I enjoy. But the other problem with that is that those freelance writers tend to be the most diverse writers that they have. The majority of the people who work on Dungeons and Dragons at Wizards of the Coast are white men. And while they do have, they have had standout hires for, there was a non-binary person, or Orion Black, who was a person of color, and there was a woman. I'm struggling. Kate Welch, who both of them left Wizards of the Coast within recent years for varying reasons, but both were somewhat vocal about the fact that they left because they did not enjoy what it was like being there. Orion Black left because they felt like they were hired as a diversity stunt, and they felt like none of their actual input was being given. And Kate Welch left for a very similar reason, saying that, you know, she didn't feel like her voice mattered. And that's really problematic. And it's a real problem when something is striving to and trying to portray itself as making inroads to be diverse like they are, and they are not backing it up as much with the actual work that needs to be done. It feels like, and this is a tangent and also a weird comparison, but it feels like some politicians and how they talk about climate change. You know, they say the right words, they talk about the right things, but the actions they take don't measure up to making actual change. And that's a lot of things now. You know, we live in a culture where, you know, I shouldn't say we live in a culture where, we live in a society, wow, I just used that sentence, where appearances can be more important in many ways than actual action, which is really sad. People will take someone's word to mean they are going to actually do something, but not follow up to make sure that person is actually doing something, which is horribly trusting for a society that also seems to be incredibly critical of people who don't necessarily match up to the standards of what they want to see people being doing. By that I mean, some people are willing to take the words of certain people over the words of other people. And the certain people over the words of other certain peoples should be pretty obvious what I'm talking about. And it's problematic. It really is. You know, especially when it comes to corporations and businesses where their sole sort of purpose for existing is to make money. If you don't make sure that a business is actually following through with the promises that they've told, they will not do it. If there is not a reasoning to do it that somehow connects back to money, then they won't do it. And that's because of the system that we live in and how it's constructed. That is to say, other companies have started to make the push to do things. And these are companies that are run by people. They are predominantly smaller companies, but they're run by people who care about what they're doing and who are, generally speaking, creators themselves. Though that is also a generalization, and I'm sure that there are plenty of people out there who are in business who are ethical, I would say, or who care about more than just the money, but also care about whatever it is that they're providing. For example, I talked last time about Paizo, and I talked a little bit about their unionization, and that's really amazing. And something else to talk about Paizo for that's really great is some of the changes they made to their own tabletop RPG. Now, Paizo started out originally as a company that ran the monthly pair of magazines for Dungeons and Dragons called Dungeon and Dragon. One was intended for Dungeon Masters, Dungeon, and the other one was intended for players, that was Dragon. And not that you couldn't read both of them or whatever, or they weren't like interchangeable, but they were, Paizo ran these magazines and put out amazing work, had a lot of talented creators, talented writers, and eventually Wizards of the Coast at the time decided to axe it because it wasn't making enough money or something like that. I can't remember. This is a while ago, 90s sort of era. So I'm not 100% sure what the reasoning for taking it off shelves was. But Paizo went on to start making their own tabletop RPG. There's going to be I'm going to get into a little history lesson here just to tell you like the reason why Paizo is important has to do with the history of it. So there'll be a quick history lesson here. Basically, Paizo, Dungeons & Dragons came out with their 3.5 edition, right? And there was a lot of problems with it. but a lot of people really loved it. And then they released their new fourth edition with drastic changes to what the game design was like, that moved in a different direction from what a lot of people loved. Paizo, in response, made a game called Pathfinder, which is very reminiscent to Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 edition, but with a lot of changes that were more palatable to people, that people really enjoyed. So for a very long period, for a period of time, basically from around the year 2000 till around 2014 when 5th edition came out, Pathfinder, Dungeons & Dragons 3.5, and Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition were competing to be most popular tabletop RPG on the internet. These three jostled all together, and it's the only time that Dungeons & Dragons has sort of had less sales than another tabletop RPG. It's the most popular. Like, 5th edition's blown everybody out of the water now at this point. But there was a time where people were not playing Dungeons & Dragons as much. They were playing Pathfinder, or they were playing other things. And Pathfinder recently, and recently, this is a couple of years ago now, they came out with a second edition to their game. They made changes to their game, making it a bit better. And one change that they made that is incredibly important is they renamed something. They renamed a core element to your character. So in Dungeons & Dragons, you choose your class, like warrior or... Well, actually, there's no warrior class. Fighter, wizard, cleric, paladin. You know, those general fantasy sort of classes that you think of. And you choose a race, right? You can see why race would be problematic when we're referring to elves and orcs and stuff like that. Because it's sort of... these are distinctly different creatures. Sentient creatures, and calling them races leads to some comparison to things like racial science and other bigoted forms of division. Pathfinder 2nd edition changed the name to Ancestry, which invokes a completely different thing in people's minds. Language is incredibly important, I say, speaking into a microphone so that people can hear my language. And especially with regards to stories and to games that we play. So tabletop RPGs being a storytelling game, it's important to, right off the bat, talk about language as a really important thing. Another really big thing that doesn't come from Wizards of the Coast is something called consent in gaming. If you are at all interested in tabletop RPGs and or you play tabletop RPGs, consent in gaming, which is a free downloadable PDF from a company called Monte Cook Games, that comes from someone named Monte Cook, alongside a number of diverse authors, is a guidebook to creating games that are consensual for everybody who is playing in it. Consent's not just about sex at the end of the day. Consent is about security, trust, and being able to tell stories together. Now, there are some horror stories, a specific subreddit devoted to this too, called r/RPG horror stories. And it's all about times when people have stepped over lines continuously, whether it's talking about things that are horribly inappropriate for playing games with your friends or with absolute strangers, whether it's people trying to, you know, control other people, whether it's, you know, abusive relationships, whether it's... I don't recommend you go and look it up, but if you're truly curious, go to Reddit and check it out. I don't need to spend any more time talking about it. But consent in gaming is an incredible step forward in a way to really set up rules or even guidelines for how you should be behaving at the gaming table and how you should be doing this. Ideally, we wouldn't need these, but having them there, especially because at the end of the day, you don't know everything about every person who you're playing with. Being able to have guidelines to stop the game if things get too real, to fade to black if you don't want to roleplay a situation, to, you know, be able to feel safer. Because that's what consent is about, is to be able to feel safer, to be able to let people participate in these games with you and do it in ways that are safe and consensual, that everyone agrees to. And that agreement is always able to be rescinded if things change. Just like sex. I mean, the concept's the same. But like I said with RPG horror stories on Reddit, there are problems still within the TTRPG community. There are still plenty of people out there who think that their role as Dungeon Master somehow extends outside the game or gives them some sort of power over other people, or people who create just toxic environments at the gaming table in general. You get these problems with conventions sometimes, you know. There's always, I know that there haven't been conventions for a while, unfortunately. But when there was, it felt like every other convention there was a story of someone overstepping bounds, of being, you know, toxic, of being discriminatory, of being bigoted, being just creepy in general. And you hear those at local gaming stores too. You hear people, you know, getting, like, playing games in public with people they don't know and overstepping bounds, including things that are triggering to lots of people within, whether it's their character or the story that they're trying to tell. And alongside that, there are, you know, pushback from smaller right-wing groups who are attempting to, you know, reassert that this is, you know, it's generally speaking, and I do want to say that the TTRPG community has been very good with regards to pushing back against these sort of groups specifically, because a lot of these groups are made up of older members of the hobby, people who have been around since a while ago and who remember when the game was just all white men and would like to return to that. And I hope that those people stay in their own groups and don't associate with the rest of us. Because I've talked about gatekeeping a couple of episodes here, and there's a special place for gatekeepers, I think, after we all die. Not nice place, special place, but a not nice place. You know, limiting someone else's enjoyment of a game or of anything because you don't want someone else to enjoy something that you enjoy is perhaps the most petty human emotion I've ever heard of. And I don't like it. Pettiness is not, like, a virtue by any stretch. And wanting to restrict what other people can and can't do is very much something I don't enjoy. It's the opposite of what I like. Anathema to me, one might say. Big word. There you go. Anathema. That's the word of the day today. It's also a general lack of understanding that, you know, the hobby of TTRPGs has evolved to include a very wide and diverse community of people, of people who should be welcome. You know, more people joining the community means there's more incentive for them to hire diverse people. There's more incentive for them to put out more books and more content and more cool things that we can get, or that we can watch, or that we can enjoy together with our friends. And that's a win in my books. And I have no idea why anybody could think it isn't, unless you're for some reason deluded into thinking that your narrow-minded view of something is the only view of something. So perhaps that's the reasoning. But you know, unfortunately, those people exist in our world. I wish they didn't, but they do. And I think as a community, the TTRPG space, and especially leaders in the community, people like Critical Role, but also people who run local game stores, people who organize events at conventions, need to start standing up more and more and more. Because the more you show people that their behavior is not welcome, they are either going to leave and stop hurting people or traumatizing people. I don't know why I said that weird. That was weird. But either that, or they will realize what their behavior is doing and change their behavior and become better people. This isn't about excluding anyone. I never said that we should exclude people. I have a problem with gatekeeping because it is exclusionary. If they continue to try to exclude other people from the hobby, then they shouldn't get to enjoy it with the rest of the people who are trying to. But if they realize what it is they are doing and that it is wrong and seek to change, they should be welcomed back. And they should be able to have the opportunity to be confronted for what they're doing. That's how human interaction works. You know, when you see someone doing something that's wrong, you don't just ignore it. You go up and you confront them and you be like, hey, that's not cool. Why is it you're doing this? Do you want to talk about this? This is a, you know, I say it in this all the time. It's conversation, right? You have a conversation. And I know for a lot of people, it's hard to do that. And that's why I said that you need leaders in the community to stand up for those people. If you are being put into a leadership position, whether you like it or not, you are in that position and you need to act properly in that position. You need to stand up for the people who are vulnerable in our communities and show the people who are perpetrating and creating victims that what they're doing is wrong. And then they get to make a choice as to whether or not they want to continue to try to victimize people and then be left alone by the greater community, or if they figure out that what they're doing is wrong, they can confront themselves and try to make changes for the better. But yeah, I mean, the only way positive change happens is if we all try to do it together. Yeah, I don't think I really need to say any more than that. But thank you for listening to this episode. Like I said, I'm going to have the third episode in this string of episodes on gaming coming out next week. I'm not sure what I'm going to do after that yet. I'm going to have to sit down and do a little brainstorming for some more topics. Maybe I'll look through the news. That's always fun. But like I said before, this is a conversation. If you would like to reach out, feel free to email me at radionerdwlu@gmail.com or reach out on Instagram, whether it's, you know, liking posts, sending a DM, or commenting. Feel free to do them all. And you can find the show at @radio_WLU. And there should be a post up around the time that this episode goes live. Have a good day, and I'll talk to you next week.